This is an iHeart podcast.
We have a new chairman of the Joint Chiefs. We'll talk about that in military matters. We're going to discuss the future of the country, if you will. And why do we have a new climate corps of young people? All that's coming up on I'm Right. I need to stop reading history books, specifically because we're about to go into military in our new chairman of the Joint Chiefs. I need to stop reading World War II history books. I do this. Every dude does this. I don't know why we do this. I love them. But what hits me, what floors me, is the unwavering patriotism of that generation of young men and how committed they were to fighting for this country that they loved and how universal that was across this country. Story after story after story, you read about young men crawling over broken glass to get into the military to fight for America, lying on their military entrance forms when they didn't think they could get in, lying about their age, their parents wouldn't sign them up, they're forging things on documents. Multiple, I don't mean one, multiple stories of young men committing suicide during World War II because they weren't allowed to join the military. Imagine that level of patriotism across the country, where if you can't go fight and maybe die for your country, you kill yourself. Now, the reason I need to stop reading this stuff is I juxtapose that with what's currently happening in this country and specifically with the military. And what it does to me is it just brings it home. It makes everything so crystal clear exactly how far we've fallen and exactly where we are. Because this generation of patriotic young men, our most patriotic young men, they're not crawling over broken glass to join the military. They're crawling over broken glass to avoid it. They don't want to be part of the military. It's, look, you don't have to take my word for it. The recruiting numbers speak for themselves. Young men do not want to be part of this military right now. And why would they? Look, let's talk about the new chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Why would they? Tommy Tuberville's been making all kinds of news. Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville for blocking, well, what they've been saying is he's been doing, they're lying, is he's blocking generals and admirals from getting promotions. That's not what he's doing. What he's doing is he's blocking unanimous consent, it's called. What is that? He's blocking automatic promotions, essentially blanket promotions, where instead of this guy having to come before the Senate and get a yes or no vote, you're approved, you're not approved, instead, they just want to bring you a whole basket of names and say, here are all the guys we want to promote. And normally all the senators say, yeah, yeah, sounds good, because senators are completely useless. Tommy Tuberville happens to be a senator who uses his power, praise God for him, because of the military funding abortions. Tommy Tuberville has stepped up and said, as long as the military does this, it's wrong, it's illegal, there's no more unanimous consent. He's been blocking it. Now, keep in mind, the only thing he even has the power to block is this unanimous consent thing, where they bring all the names in one big basket. Chuck Schumer has and has had the power to bring any individual name up for a vote in front of the Senate. You know this because he did so yesterday.
I have just filed cloture on the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, and the Army Chief of Staff. These men should have already been confirmed. They should already be serving in their new positions. The Senate should not have to go through procedural hoops just to please one brazen and misguided senator. And the abortion policy that Senator Tuberville abhors will remain in place. Senator Tuberville will have accomplished nothing. But the harm he is doing to the military and their families remains, and unfortunately continues for hundreds of others.
Harm. The harm he's doing to the military and their families. Harm he's doing. Harm. Well, I've got news for you and really everybody, and this is difficult. This will be difficult to accept for people who are unfamiliar with things going on in the military, maybe people who didn't serve and kind of have this lofty view of all these generals and admirals. Most of those people suck. And most of those people should be nowhere near the military. And most of those people, their very presence in the military actually hampers the military. In fact, probably the best thing you could do for the military instead of promoting all those people would be to fire all of them. Would you lose one or two good eggs in there? Oh, of course. But for the most part, you'd be losing people like, oh, I don't know, Charles Q. Brown, C.Q. Brown Jr., if you will. He is the new chairman of the Joint Chiefs. If you want to know why young men in the United States of America don't want to join the military anymore, take a look at the man who now runs it.
You can't let it just be happenstance that brings in the diversity, whether it be race, gender, ethnic background, sexual orientation, socioeconomic background. You really got to spend some time thinking about it, because you may miss an opportunity if you don't really spend some time looking at the slate of candidates and then asking some hard questions. And that's an aspect of, you know, me as the chief of staff, when I sit down with Secretary Barrett, we just had a conversation about this yesterday as we're looking at some key positions. You know, who are diverse candidates, and are we making sure we are grooming them so they have the opportunity?
Life and death. Young men and women dying, and dying in horrible ways. Those are the stakes of military accomplishment and failure. And the new chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff openly brags on videotape how he sits down to choose people for critical leadership positions, and he does so based on skin color. You see, that young man in Nebraska, he's on his high school football team. He's a junior this year. He loves World War II movies and documentaries, maybe even books like I do. His dad fought in Vietnam. He's always had a dream to put on the uniform, go see what he's made of, fight for his country. That young man, that junior in high school in Nebraska, that's the kind of young man who earns a Medal of Honor one day, charging up a hill to carry his buddies to safety. But you know what that young man is not going to do? He's not going to join to serve underneath somebody who talks about St. George Floyd this way.
As the commander of Pacific Air Forces, a senior leader in our Air Force, and an African-American, many of you may be wondering what I'm thinking about the current events surrounding the tragic death of George Floyd. Here's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about how full I am with emotion, not just for George Floyd, but the many African-Americans that have suffered the same fate as George Floyd. I can't fix centuries of racism in our country, nor can I fix decades of discrimination that may have impacted members of our Air Force. I'm thinking about how I can make improvements personally, professionally, and institutionally so that all airmen, both today and tomorrow, appreciate the value of diversity and can serve in an environment where they can reach their full potential. I want the wisdom and knowledge to lead, participate in, and listen to necessary conversations on racism, diversity, and inclusion.
That young man in Nebraska is just going to go do something else. And this is why you think we have a recruiting crisis, but it's actually so much worse. It's not just that we're not coming close to making our numbers for recruiting. The numbers we're bringing in, they aren't people you want in the military, because the ones you want in the military, they don't want to join and serve under that. Are great young men and women still joining to serve? Absolutely. And you should say a prayer for them every day because of the state of their leadership. But there aren't near enough of them. And you know what really cracks me up about all this is, boy, Republicans love to talk about woke these days, don't they? They love to complain about it. And you know what they really, really love? They love to complain about it in the military, because that's a very safe thing to do. Even most Democrats kind of don't want all this stuff in the military. So Republicans love to get up in front of the camera and say, ah, military's too woke, and drag queen story hour, and this is ridiculous. But you see, that guy's the new chairman of the Joint Chiefs because the Senate had a vote. Would you like to know how many Republicans stood against the new chairman, chairman diversity hire? 11. 11 of them. All the names you know. Cruz, Hawley, Schmidt, Vance, Ron Johnson, etc. All the names you know. You see, all the other Republican senators who love to complain about woke this and woke that, and there's no place for this in the military, they all lined up to vote for more of it yesterday. And one more thing young men don't want to do. And again, Your opinion on this, my opinion on this really doesn't really matter. This is the truth. That same young man in Nebraska, he doesn't dream of putting on the uniform to go die for Ukraine.
And as President Biden and Secretary Austin have said many, many times over, we, the United States, will continue to provide support to Ukraine for as long as it takes.
As long as it takes. We had Mike Pence going out there yesterday talking about young men and women having to go to Ukraine if this thing fails. Lindsey Graham, Tom Cotton talking about sending Ukraine more missiles. We need to ramp this thing up more and more and more and more. Young men, that young man in Nebraska, whatever you think about the Russia-Ukraine disaster, he doesn't want to go die over there. And lastly, this matters. I'm not going to say people in the military overwhelmingly care about politics because they don't. I didn't. I wasn't very political when I was in. But they do care about the commander-in-chief. We were very, very aware of who the president was, how he spoke about us, how he spoke, period. And in fact, I can't imagine serving in the military while the commander-in-chief gets up in front of other world leaders and it goes like this.
President of the Federative Republic of Brazil, accompanied by the Director General of the International Labor Organization.
They will drive our clean energy transition. They will keep the global supply chain secure.
Can you hear me, President Biden? This is a historical moment for Brazil and for the U.S. President Biden, can you hear me? You can? Yes, good.
Just got stiffed on the handshake. All right, all that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Let's talk about putting our money where our morals are. This is a very difficult thing to do in many ways, isn't it? Where you spend and don't spend your money, because corporate America is so political now. It matters. Where you spend and don't spend matters. The credit card thing is something that has eluded us forever, because you give to these big bank credit cards, and you're giving to Black Lives Matter. You're giving to all the worst left-wing communist protests you can possibly imagine. That's what you're giving to when you give to the big bank credit cards. Until now. Now we have COIN. COIGN. What are they? Well, they give to organizations that share your values. So we're talking, you get a credit card with unlimited cash rewards that supports your values, and you get to stop supporting BLM with every purchase? How's that sound? Sound like a plan? It is. Go right now, coin.com/Jesse and sign up. Let's put our money where our morals are. We all use credit cards. coin.com/Jesse. Go to coin.com/disclosures for more information. We'll be back.
Today, we decided to leave our policy interest rate unchanged and to continue to reduce our securities holdings. Looking ahead, we're in a position to proceed carefully in determining the extent of additional policy firming that may be appropriate.
Okay, that's a long bunch of finance nerd ways of saying that they didn't raise the rates, which is good, right? It's good, we should be happy. Let's ask Carol if we should be happy. The great Carol Roth joins us now, author of the great new book that's going gangbusters. You will own nothing. If you want to know what these WEF globalist freaks are doing to you, go buy the book. Carol, okay, they didn't raise rates. That's a good thing, right? There's no way that can be a bad thing.
I love how you sort of slipped in that I'm a finance nerd in there. I'll take it, Jesse. I'm okay with my nerdy moniker. I am a nerd. Listen, I think this was a prudent thing to do, but I don't know that it is the end of the Fed's hiking cycle, and I'm not sure that they're going to be able to handle what's ahead, because even though we have a slower growth rate in inflation, we still have sticky inflation, and sometimes correlation isn't causation. So a lot of what we're seeing, I don't think, has actually been impacted by Fed policy. In fact, coming out of 15 years of highly historic suppression of the interest rates and $9 trillion added to their balance sheets, and they're messing and manipulating with the market, I don't really think that, you know, what they have done has even begun to work its way through the economy, nor do I think they have addressed things like the fiscal deficits, which they can't address directly, but they could certainly wag a finger at the president and Congress, which they refuse to do, nor our energy policy, because while they can print dollars, they can't print oil. So, you know, a pause was definitely warranted, in my opinion, and maybe we'll give the debt and deficit a little breathing room in terms of refinancing, 25 basis points worth. But, you know, we're not out of the woodwork yet. And certainly in this thesis of a soft landing, you know, will they be able to get inflation down to what it is they want without tipping the economy into a recession? I don't think that we're out of the woods on either side of that.
Speaking of soft landing, he brought that up yesterday. Here he was.
I've always thought that the soft landing was a plausible outcome, that there was a path, really, to a soft landing. I've thought that, and I've said that since we lifted off. It's also possible that the path has narrowed and it's widened, apparently. Ultimately, this may be decided by factors that are outside our control at the end of the day. But I do think it's possible.
Okay, so, Carol, what is that supposed to mean? I hate the way all these people talk. I mean, the soft landing is very possible. It's kind of possible. It might be possible. It's narrowed. Wait, it's widened, but it's narrowed again, but it's kind of possible. Anyway, we'll see what happens. What is he saying?
He's saying a whole lot of nothing. That was the biggest bunch of gobbledygook that I've ever seen. You know, it's very interesting. As I said, on the inflation piece, there are a couple of issues that I do think are a challenge for inflation. Obviously, the fiscal policy, the debt and the deficits, given the fact that we have these crazy high rates. We have $7.6 trillion in U.S. government debt that is coming due that needs to be refinanced in the next 12 months. And that's going to be at rates that are hundreds of basis points higher than what it was financed at previously. So that means hundreds of billions of dollars of incremental interest on top of what we're already paying for all the debt we've already incurred, not to mention the fact that we have these huge deficits. You know, we're talking about almost $2 trillion is the projection from the CBO for fiscal year 2023. So the fact that that continues to need to be financed could end up in and of itself creating an inflationary cycle. And then, Jesse, let's just pray that we don't get a cold winter either here in the U.S. or in Europe, because that's going to send already high oil prices, you know, higher perhaps to the levels or even beyond the levels we saw last year. So those are the kinds of things that can continue to stoke inflation. So, you know, that's one piece of the puzzle. And then on the recession side, you know, you have a strong, quote unquote, strong consumer in terms of the consumer has been spending on a regular basis, but their balance sheets are getting wrecked. They've been dipping into their savings. The personal saving rate is down below historic levels. It's at 3.5%. We have record household debt of $17.1 trillion. We have student loan debts that are kicking in. But strangely enough, that even if, you know, you get some break in the jobs market, the consumer starts to roll over, it doesn't necessarily mean we're getting a recession either, because the government spending is now taking up even more of the GDP. So that could balance out. And these other sticky pieces of inflation could, you know, kind of counteract what's happening with the consumer. So we're in very weird, unprecedented times. And what you might think is a normal outcome from a certain set of things happening isn't a guarantee here. And that's why you're hearing the gobbledygook from the Fed, because they're panicking. The one thing we're not hearing from them is, oh, sorry, it's our fault. We helped cause this and we feel real badly about it. So we're definitely not hearing
that. Was printing $7 trillion wrong? Was that our fault, Bart? Sorry about that. Carol Roth, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Carol Markowitz. It's a Carol night on the show. Carol Roth just joined us. Carol Markowitz joins us next. Carol Roth hit us with the finance stuff. Carol Markowitz is going to talk about New York City, illegal immigration, and other things. Let's talk to you real quick about your testosterone. Listen, it's in the water. Estrogens are in the water. Testosterone levels have been cut in half in the last 50 years because we're drinking estrogens. It's in the plastics. It's in the waters. We are showering in them. We have to do something to counteract that, or we're finished as a country. We're just not going to make enough babies. We all need testosterone, men young and old. We have to have it. Go start a male vitality stack from Chalk today. Give it 90 days and tell me how you feel. 20% increase in your testosterone in 90 days. CHOQ.com. Promo code Jesse gets you 35% off subscriptions. Get a subscription so you don't have to order every month. Chalk.com. Promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
We have to let the word out that when you come to New York, we're not going to have more hotel rooms. We don't have capacity. So we have to also message properly that we're at our limit. If you're going to leave your country, go somewhere else. But the smarter thing is to apply for asylum before you leave your country.
If you're going to leave your country, go somewhere else. And look, I know it's a simplistic point that has been made by 1,000 people before me, but I'm a simple man, so I'll just make it too. It is hilarious how these communists are all pro-illegal immigration right up to the point where they have to deal with them, right to the point where they have to feed them, house them, educate them. Now they all sound like me. Joining me now, Carol Markowitz. She is, of course, an author. She wrote a book called Stolen Youth. It's quite good, if I may say so myself. And she's a former New Yorker. Carol, look, everybody's made the point, so it's not like it's original, but these people really do not like having to deal with the illegal immigrants they claim to love.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I saw Kathy Hochul, she also said yesterday that New York is full and New York is at capacity. And I was like, wow, she sounds a lot like Jesse. So, you know, maybe she's watching the show. I just feel like, of course, if you say Texas is full and at capacity, you are a horrible racist. When she says it, she's just telling the truth. Look, it's funny because I have heard from a lot of New Yorkers who, you know, I self-identify as liberals, and they're saying it's really bad. It's really bad. I live near one of these hotels. They tell me the garbage is bad. The crime is bad. Like, things have just gotten out of control. And the thing is, what did they believe was happening in the Texan border towns? What did they think was happening in these tiny towns as people cross the border illegally and set up shop there? This is New York City. You should have space for everybody, right? I mean, what did they think was happening in Texas?
Carol, I'm glad you brought up your liberal New York friends, because we have, as you mentioned, the crime's really bad, the trash is really bad, from what I understand from my New York friends. We have this thing with the schools. Well, we have a little clip on it here.
What did you think that as well? AOC, you know, when she came out and other members of Congress, they had this press conference. What do you think about their comments?
They will never be allowed to walk down the streets again. Yes. They have destroyed our city. And New York, especially Queens, has woken up. And they will not be here again without hearing from us. And the people need to stand up and take our city back.
Right.
Take it back.
Take it back.
I have family members waiting 7 long years in Columbia. They filed legal petitions. What message are you sending to the world? Break the law. Come, we give you everything free. Joe Biden, do you think that's going to stop the border?
Carol, are they mad enough to change how they vote? Are they as mad as those gentlemen?
I don't think so, Jesse. I hope so. I would love to see that be, you know, the turning point for New York to climb out of the place that it's been for the last few years, but I just really don't think so. I feel like a lot of New Yorkers are not making the connection that these men are making. So I know that you know this about me, but I'm a refugee. I was born in the Soviet Union. I came to America as a kid, but there was a process. My family waited in Italy and waited for permission to be allowed in. Plenty of people were denied. People went to Australia, people went to Canada, people went to Israel, people went to other European countries. And because America told them no, or because, you know, that was the only country that let them in. But now it's like you get on a plane and you just come. The guy who's saying my family's been waiting in Colombia for 7 years, you kind of feel for them, because literally the easier way for them would just be to take a flight to Mexico and cross the border and you're in. And, you know, it really does shake up the process when people are not waiting their turn. I really feel for this man and his family because they're not getting in because other people are cutting the line, and that seems to be okay.
Carol, I find this dynamic within the Democrat Party interesting. Joe Biden famously visited New York City over the past few days, went up there to raise some of those New York City dollars, didn't meet with Eric Adams, didn't go to any of the illegal immigrant hotels. Adams has been chirping at him publicly. This is going to cause a problem for Biden, right?
Is it? You know, the thing is also that I don't want to give any credit whatsoever to Mayor Adams or Governor Hochul. They are responsible for this just as much as any other Democrat. What they're saying right now, if you listen to Hochul, she's not saying, you know, let's kick them out. She's not saying they broke the law to get here. We have to stop this. She's not saying let's close the border and really contain the flow. No, she's saying we need more money. We need to legalize basically the people that are here and give them work permits. And Mayor Adams, who's been seen as some kind of moderate on immigration, is literally saying the same thing. He's saying, yeah, they all broke the law to get here, but now that they're here, let's give them work permits and let them work so that we don't have to take care of them. I'm sorry, but that's not moderate. That is far, far left. They're, you know, as you say, communists, and I think that that applies to all of them. So is Biden in trouble? No, they're all on the same team.
Speaking of communists, here's communist John Denver, the head of the teachers union.
Those same words that you heard in terms of wanting segregation post Brown v. Board of Education, those same words you hear today. It's not, you know, I was kind of gobsmacked when I was talking to Southern Poverty Law Center and they showed me the same words, choice, parental rights, an attempt to divide parents versus teachers. And that point, it was white parents versus other parents. But it's the same kind of words.
Yes, same kind of words. You have a great piece up in the New York Post about that corrupt hag with the crew cut, don't you, Carol?
I do. You know, the Southern Poverty Law Center, it cannot be said enough, is a scam organization. And whenever I see anybody who's not a full-blown leftist taking them seriously, we have to point it out. And we have to say, like, you are amplifying a scam organization that supports people like Randy Weingarten. Nobody hurt black and brown poor children more than Randy Weingarten keeping schools closed across the country. Nobody. Nobody's had a greater effect making their lives worse than Randy Weingarten on these kids. So she could say whatever she wants. She can call all of us racists. We know who the racist is here. It's the woman that kept schools closed for the poorest children in the country. And, you know, meanwhile, of course, all the rich kids went to school, or all the kids in places where Randy Weingarten didn't get to control the politicians went to school. It's really only the people that she was able to control, they suffered the most harm because of her.
Speaking of kids, Carol, sorry to put you on the spot here, but your son apparently got in on the How Often Men Think About the Roman Empire game. He has a YouTube channel, 1 Minute History, and, well, here it is for everybody.
Hello and welcome back to 1 Minute History. Got a little bit of a long episode. It's about why do men think about the Roman Empire all the time? I hope you enjoyed this video. It's supposed to be very great. And subscribe and like the channel would be pretty great, as I only have 17 subscribers. Come on, we gotta get that bigger. The first reason I think men think about the Roman Empire all the time is because it's just massive and lasting influence. If you look at the map right here, it just covers so much land that all of that influence is left. This big influence gave us a bunch of the things today. Pants, swords, which might be from Iberia, spears, which might be from somewhere else, and just France and England. They battled the Britons and killed the Celts. The Roman Empire left a massive influence. I think reason two should be the military. The Roman Empire had such an amazing military divided into legions. That military conquered it all. The Roman military was one of the reasons why men think of the Roman Empire all the time. It's a big, tough military. I know some men don't want to be big and tough, but a lot of men do, and that's why I think they think of it. For the third and final reason is the government. The reason I think men think of Rome because of the government is because the government was strong and powerful, and definitely had a lot of influence and was very smart. Men want to be like this too most of the time. Being strong, influenced, powerful, all of those are great traits. In this picture, it portrays the end of the Roman Empire. I know it's sad. This video is ending too. So I hope you enjoyed. See you in the next video of 1 Minute History.
Yo, you missed the best line. And that, I know some men don't want to be big and tough, but most men do. That's the key part there, Jesse.
My favorite part was he's talking about all the influence and everything they gave us, and his first thing was pants. They gave us pants. It was great. Anyway, the kid's only got 17 subscribers, everybody. It's called 1 Minute History. Go give the kid some subscribers. He's way better than Carol. Thank you, Carol. Give my best to your awesome son.
Thank you, Jesse. Thanks so much.
Of course, I appreciate it. All right, let's talk about the church. What's going on with it? We're going to talk to Lucas Miles about that next. Before we talk about that, let's do this. Let's talk about family. You see, I try to keep my family as healthy as humanly possible. The wife does a lot more of that than me, but I try to keep my family as healthy as possible. Part of that for me is Eden Pure Thunderstorm, because it kills viruses and mold in the air. When I found out just how much of that crap is in the air, I was a bit grossed out, I'll be honest. Yes, in your house, in your office, it's just, there's garbage in the air. We have to clean it. Eden Pure Thunderstorm will clean your air for you constantly. Plug it in where you sleep. You will smell a difference. You can taste a difference in the air once you finally clean your air. They have 3 packs of these for sale, $200 off. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse is how you get that $200 off. Free shipping. These things are miracles. I own 9 of them. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. We'll be back.
Generally speaking, when we talk about family values, the first thing that comes to my head is, well, focus on the family. It reminds me of some of the bigotry and some of the ways in which those family values, if you will, have been hijacked by the religious right. If you identify with the drag community, please come and join us at the front one and the wall. For too long, we have denied the full expression of God's loving diversity. We have silenced the voices of the queer community, denied beauty of drag, and stifled self-expression. Today, we declare that we will no longer stand idly by as oppression and discrimination are allowed to thrive.
We embrace radical inclusivity and work to dismantle systems of oppression in all areas of our lives.
What is going on in the American church? Obviously, there are some that are just openly gross. Many are subtly gross. Those are probably more damaging. But why isn't the church in the front of this country anymore? And why is the church as it stands right now crumbling? Joining me now, Pastor Lucas Miles, author of the book Woke Jesus. Okay, Pastor, not every church obviously has trannies up there doing communion and chanting things and all the other things like that. But there are a whole lot of false doctrines being tossed around in the church in this country now.
Absolutely. I mean, look, we're seeing this internationally as well. We just had a kind of radical Catholic priest or bishop in Germany that was blessing same-sex marriages and same-sex couples. You know, look, there are schisms happening in virtually every single denomination. The Methodist Church, even the Southern Baptist Church here in the U.S., has been really ravished over these things in many ways. And I think it's really, you know, starting to show itself as this is not secondary issues. This is not just, you know, debatable doctrines. This is ultimately the worship of two different deities, the true biblical Christ that we have presented in Scripture, or this woke Jesus that I write about, that we're hearing talked about, that ultimately is a false deity.
How did this happen? How did this worm its way into the church? Like you mentioned, a Catholic priest blessing same-sex marriage. That's pretty black and white in the Bible. It doesn't leave a lot of room up for interpretation on the biblical view on that.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, look, we could go back all the way to the 1700s and start looking at the introduction of progressive ideology into the church. In more recent years, I think that the birth of the seeker-sensitive movement, although it did a great job of making converts, did a really poor job of making disciples. And in many ways, it sort of set up the next generation as a having a form of Christianity, a form of spirituality, but without any substance, without really a strong commitment to the Word of God. There was a large percentage of Christians who were attending church, but were still biblically illiterate, as of course we're seeing only expanded on today. And so when new ideas came in, this false gospel of, you know, this kind of under the guise, what I call the Trojan horse of social justice, it was presented to Christians that, you know, weren't able to truly discern if this was orthodox thinking or not. They grabbed a hold of it. They endorsed it. And of course, it's only gotten more radicalized since then with the divergent views of, you know, sexuality and critical, you know, queer theory and all these things that have been added on to that. But it's been definitely a slow, you know, progression that now seems to be speeding up very rapidly as it's hitting more and more, you know, really schisms and separations within movements.
Pastor, can you speak to this seeker-sensitive movement you brought up for those who are unfamiliar with it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the seeker-sensitive movement, I mean, you know, people might be familiar with, say, Willow Creek in Chicago or Rick Warren's ministry out in California at Saddleback. These were churches that I think were pioneering this in a lot of way. And I think with good intention initially, they started off looking for what's the best way to be able to onboard somebody to the Christian faith. And so they sought to structure their churches in ways that, you know, would kind of make the services shorter and sort of, you know, minimize the teaching time to more, you know, bite-sized chunks that people could, you know, could really endure during a service. But ultimately, this desire to make converts quickly and to grow rapidly, and it produced a lot of big mega churches, it didn't disciple people into maturity. It didn't develop them in the teaching of the Word of God. It didn't get them to a place to where they could discern falsehood from and you know, from truth and fact from fiction. And so ultimately, I think it left a lot of Christians very vulnerable to false ideas. And you know, so as we see this sort of leftist, progressive, Marxist form of Christianity that's being presented with the woke gospel, in many ways, it sounded right to people. It tickled their ears in the way that they needed, and unfortunately, they took it hook, line, and sinker.
Pastor, one of the things, and you may disagree with me on this, and that's totally fine, by the way, one of the things that frustrates me a lot, I speak about it a lot, is how laissez-faire Christians are about the electoral process, about voting, about politics in this country. Poll after poll shows about 50% of American Christians even vote. They'll go sit in a pew on Sunday and hear all these things about family and values and marriage and whatnot. And then on election day, I don't know exactly what they're doing, Pastor. Maybe they're sitting at home praying, but they're not voting. The other side very much is voting, and Christians don't somehow think this is a priority for them. It drives me insane.
Yeah, look, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I mean, the stats show that you're exactly right, that Christians have, I think in many ways, it's sort of this escapist mentality that, you know, the rapture doctrine has influenced a lot of people, and I'm not trying to say I'm for or against the idea of a rapture right now, but just sort of the extreme escapist view that God's coming back, I don't have to worry about anything, he's going to get me out of here before the real problems set in. And that's not really a biblical worldview. A biblical worldview is that we occupy until he comes. This is what scripture teaches us. We should be seeking to influence the world. My church is called Influence Church. There's no I, it's N-F-L-U-E-N-C-E. And that's really our attitude, is that we want to influence the world. We want to influence this nation with the truth of the gospel. I'm not looking for a theocracy. I don't want the church to take over the government. But I do want the gospel to really impact and inspire people to such a degree that it reaches up to the highest levels of the land and really starts inspiring righteousness and just decisions and you know, a greater sense of morality and purpose, and that we are here, you know, created by God to live out this life that he's given us. And that should start shaping morality and policies and laws eventually. Christians, it is not optional to be involved in this process. We should utilize every single available resource in order to get involved. And pastors that are out there, let me just say this. If pastors, who told you that abortion is political? Who told you that same-sex marriage is a political topic? Who told you that sovereign borders is a political topic? As Christians and as pastors, we are called to teach the full counsel of God, and we should be speaking on every single issue that is relevant today and equipping our church to be able to think biblically about all of those items.
Pastor, did America's
kindness to us, because America was founded by Christians for the most part, that America's kindness to Christianity, is that part of what made us too soft, if you will? I mean, you see people in China, they're in Afghanistan, they're hiding in the basements of their apartments trying to pull up the Bible app, which can get their heads cut off on their phones. It hasn't been like that for us here. It's been easy to be a Christian here. You don't get any crap for wearing a cross necklace in this country. Is that what made us soft?
I don't think it's the only thing. I mean, certainly there's a point to be made there. You know, the church father Tertullian said that the death of the martyr is the death of the martyr is the seed of the church. When persecution happens, the church has a tendency to expand, to grow. I mean, we've seen right now, even with the amount of tyranny that we've seen, you know, really projected on this nation through COVID and through the rise of Antifa and BLM and everything else that's happened. Our church has grown probably three or four times in the last 12 to 18 months. You know, so we are seeing a lot of growth, a lot of, we could use this term, maybe revival in people as they're starting to realize what's at stake. The problem is, you're right, we should have been recognizing this a decade ago, 20 years ago. And there were people that were ringing that bell. I just don't think it was heard widely, because I think a lot of Christians were still comfortable. They never would dream that this might come on our shores. And now all of a sudden we're starting to see Christians, you know, face degrees and increasing degrees of persecution in this nation. And I think people are starting to wake up a little bit, but they need to wake up a lot sooner.
How many pastors do you talk to? Do you talk to any who understand that the federal government is making the church the enemy, that they are coming for the church, whether the church wants to acknowledge that or not? They are coming for it. Do pastors grasp that? And I ask because we sat down with ours for lunch a couple weeks ago, my wife and I, and he was one of these guys who didn't even watch the news. Like, he was totally unaware of what was going on, and I was just flabbergasted at how naive this guy was.
So earlier this year, we launched an initiative called the American Pastor Project. It's AmericanPastorProject.org. And basically what this is a high-level doctrinal statement that pastors across virtually any denomination should be able to adhere to and agree to, and that they're really making a commitment to biblical orthodoxy and also taking a stand against these heresies that we're seeing of wokeism, globalism, radical Marxism, et cetera. And they're saying that we are not going to allow these things from the pulpit. We have about 500 pastors that have signed this statement already. I can tell you, I was just at the, I spoke at the Turning Point Faith Conference, Pastors Conference that they had last week in San Diego. There was about 1,100 pastors in attendance there. There is a growing constituency of pastors that I think understand this, but there are still a lot of pastors that have their head in the sand. They're, like you said, they're not watching the news. They're not tied in. If they are aware of these things, they're either afraid or they're willingly looking the other way. And we need those pastors to recognize that they have a duty, that they are called by God to preach the full counsel of the Word of God, and that includes taking a biblical stand on each of these issues and teaching their people to do the same.
Yeah. Pastor, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse.
Of course. All right. We have a lighten the mood next. Let's do this first. Let's lighten the load on your wallet. You see, rough greens, it's an easy sell when you're giving somebody more years with their dog. Who doesn't want more years with the dog? Everyone wants more years with your dog. Rough greens will keep your dog alive longer. What you may not realize is rough greens keeps you away from the vet. When you stop giving your dog just junk food, which is dog food every day, and you start giving them vitamins, minerals, and probiotics, and omega oils, and all these things, your dog doesn't have to go to the doctor, the vet, as much. Rough greens saves me money. They give out free bags right now. Natural herbal supplement poured on your dog's food. Free bags. All you pay for is the shipping. Call them. 833-33-MY-DOG. Or you can go to roughgreens.com/Jesse. We'll be back. I hate how much I like this light in the mood. Sometimes, you ever have a moment where you look at yourself and you say, am I a bad person? Like the other day I was riding with the wife and she says to me, she said, totally straight face, she says, your problem is you think you're the normal one and the entire rest of the world is weird. So you should just get to do what you want all the time. That's what she said to me. We were laughing. I was laughing so daggone hard I almost cried, because I think that's probably fair. I don't know why I think this is so funny, but I do. We'll get to it in a moment. Before we get to that, let's get to the timeshare you're stuck in. You know that you can get out of that timeshare, right? You're not stuck in your timeshare.
Everyone thinks they are. And they think they are because these timeshare companies are professional liars. They get you to sign the contract, and then they tell you when you try to get out, no, sorry, you got to keep paying annual fees and special assessments. No, you didn't read the contract. And they'll send you the part of the contract that says you're stuck for life. Lone Star Transfer has been through all this. They're successful 99% of the time. That's guarantees. They guarantee it. They put it down in writing. They put it in writing, a time frame, and they say, we'll get you out. You're one phone call away from freedom. 844-310-2646, and you're free. All right? Call them. Now, Merrick Garland spoke yesterday, and we played a bit of his testimony before Congress. But maybe the most insane thing I saw yesterday wasn't what came out of Merrick Garland's mouth. It was this.
I need water. Help me. I need water. Help.
You have to keep drinking, like you said, remember?
Ready?
You want to grab that water for a second?
Who drinks water like that? I have a bottle of water right here. And I was actually looking at it during that clip. I was thinking to myself, man, I'm a little bit thirsty. I think I'll drink water. And I was thinking I would drink it like this. What kind of a person goes two hands on the water bottle? Who does that? All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.